In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I discuss 9 tactics for aggressive time management. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 204. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. It's a word this week, Mike.
Dear Skype, you're not actually improving my Skype experience when you just randomly upgrade in the middle of the day for me.
Oh, and then the UI is different every time they do?
It drives me nuts. I mean, I understand there's certain types of software, and there's times where you need to do it, but it seems like every single time I fire it up, it's just like, there's something new. Here you go. Yep. Learn it all over again. Oh,
yeah.
It drives me insane.
It's not cool. On a lighter note, we have pictures from MicroConf 2014 in Vegas, and those are live at microconfpics.com. So if you want to check out some of the fun speaker photos, attendee photos, and all kinds of tasty goodness, that's over there at microconfpics.com.
Cool. I'm upgrading my iPad to iOS 8. Mm-hmm. I read the other day that iOS 8 adoption is apparently really low, and I think it would be a lot higher if it didn't take 45 hours to download, and then midway through it decides that it can't finish the connection, so it just dies.
Did it?
So you have to start over.
That's 45 hours seems like an unusually long connection. Yeah, I haven't upgraded because I'm heading out of the country tomorrow, and the last thing I needed was to either be in the middle of an update or to get an update and have it break something. And I'm bringing multiple devices. You know, this year we decided not to bring, we pretty much aren't bringing any physical books, trying to bring as little paper with us as possible, just purely because we're moving around so much in Thailand and just don't want the weight.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, it's nice with the Kindles. You can just put, you know, lots and lots of books on there. And if you get bored, you've got your whole
it's
library.
Crazy.
It's awesome.
Yep. And they don't take up much room. And then you can also put, you know, the nice part is you can put PDFs in there as well, right? And you can download them in advance. And so you don't have to worry about, because sometimes Dropbox, I'll like download something, but then it'll restart and then nothing will be there. Whereas the Kindle, if you've downloaded it into your library, it should be there when we get there. So that we don't, even if we don't have internet access, we should still be able to practice music and do some of the, we have independent study stuff we're doing with one of our kids who's in school, and that should all be intact.
Do you do that through the Kindle app, or
yeah,
like, or do you just do an actual
you
Kindle?
Email? No, we have a Kindle app on iPhone.
Okay,
yeah, and then you email the PDFs to your, you know, your Kindle app address that you can get from Amazon.
So the only other thing I've got is I held my first webinar this past week. You know, it didn't go nearly as well as I would have liked. I didn't get much in terms of attendance, but at the same time, I had a very short time window to promote it, and I'm still trying to figure out how to promote it. That's one of the big things that's kind of on my list, is to figure out how to start promoting the webinar, because, you know, over time, I don't want to saturate my list with like the same webinar over and over again. So I've let them know and told them, and I've got to figure out how to just kind of scale that up.
Right. Heard of a couple of approaches. Well, the one that I hear most often is to use the Facebook news feed, and you can actually put a short video in there. There's one recent recording, I think it was ConversionCast, and I would listen back a couple episodes, and someone talks about promoting webinars directly using Facebook newsfeed ads. So she kind of talks through the process that they use, and that's where I would start if I was going to do it. I have not actually done it, but they have a lot of success with it.
I'll have to take a look at that. I did try to record it using GoToWebinar's like built-in recording, and they just completely mangled the entire thing. I don't know what happened. The webinar itself went fine, but then the recording itself, it was all messed up. Like all the transitions and stuff, it just hung up.
Oh, no.
And then I tried converting it to like other formats, thinking that was it, but it's the source that's messed up. This past week has just been a total bust for me.
Yeah. So that's a bummer. Do you have an alternative for recording your webinars? Are you just going to try to do it through Camtasia or something?
I'm just going to try and do it again. I might, if I do it again, the next time I do the webinar and it doesn't record again, what I'll do is I'll give the webinar separately and just record it through Camtasia.
Yeah.
And that way I can polish it up a little bit. And there's services that you can use where you can send them like a webinar or a podcast or something along those lines. And you can have like white papers and eBooks and stuff created out of them. So I have to take a look at that. I learned about it at the Business of Software. So I'm going to take a look and see if I can kind of generate some content out of that kind of thing.
Very good. Well, let's dive into our topic for today. We're going to talk about 9 tactics for aggressive time management. A listener of the show emailed me and he said, I just read a good article in Entrepreneur magazine on time management in an age of information overload. This is a topic I'm very interested in because I think I lose a lot of time in my effort to be responsive. I suspect that this is something that a lot of folks in the startup tech community struggle with. And so I gave this a bit of thought, and what I didn't want to do was record an episode where we say the same things that you've already heard about time management, which is don't check email in the morning, only reply twice a day, take notes and have a to-do list and all that kind of stuff. So I really wanted to try to get a little more aggressive with it and maybe talk a little deeper about some of the ways that you and I manage our time in the way that I've found to be more effective over the years. So we have 9 points here, and I think I'll just dive into the first one. So the first tactic is to answer email in the morning, even though everyone says not to. The key here is to have the willpower to prioritize, to move things out of your email into your to-do list, and to not sit there and kill 2 hours managing your email, right? Because if you lose the morning, which tends to be most people's most productive time, then you're doing this wrong. But over the years, I've realized that not checking in the morning doesn't work for my particular work scenario because I have urgent support requests that are sometimes there. I have issues that come up that I need to triage and I need to be able to prioritize. And if I try to come in and do something first that doesn't involve email, I will often leave the most important thing until lunchtime, at which point it's too late.
Yeah, I answer email first thing in the morning as well. I have a tendency to have a lot of emails come in overnight that I have to deal with. And if I don't deal with them, then somewhere in the back of my mind, there's this little voice saying, hey, you've got a ton of email that you've got to do something about. And then I'll check it kind of periodically throughout the day, but I don't spend a lot of time on it. I do the same thing as you. I just spend some time first thing in the morning, get most of my email cleared out of the way, and then just deal with it kind of as it comes in throughout the day. But there's also times where I'll just, you know, pause my email and just ignore it for several hours at a time before I need to come back to it.
Yeah, so that's what I do as well. I check it first thing in the morning. I triage everything. If it's a quick reply, I reply instantly. I delete most of it, frankly. I put some of it into Trello. I try to get to inbox zero. I don't always. And then I will just close the Gmail tab. I have no pop-up notifications, nothing that notifies me when a new email is sent. And then I'll sit and try to get, now that I have my day prioritized and laid out, the agenda set, then I try to get at least a couple solid hours of work in before lunch.
Now, do you answer emails in the evenings too or no?
I do answer emails in the evenings, but not every night. Typically, if something requires a quick response, I will do it on my phone. Right. If I'm out and I'm able to check email, or if, you know, when I'm with my kids in the evening, I typically try to put my phone in another room so I don't check it for a few hours. But then I will check it, let's say 8 or 9 o'clock after the kids have gone to bed. And if there's something that's either a quick response or that's urgent, I will reply. But if there's anything that requires more thought or a little more work, then I try to triage it, get it out of the inbox so it's set, you know, on the agenda either for the next day or for down the line. And I do use I use the A and the B priority stuff in Trello. So if it's something that can wait, I will kind of kick it down the line and expect to get to it, you know, in a week or two when I have time. Second tactic I want to talk about is something I already touched on a little bit, is to turn off email, Facebook, and Twitter notifications and any other social network or any other thing that can interrupt you during the day. Text messages are a big one as well. I think the big exception, of course, is if your kid's school is going to call or, you know, there's something that you really have to be alerted to. But frankly, I turn off all notifications and people know that they should text me or they should call me if it's urgent.
So by Facebook and Twitter notifications, do you mean you have these apps installed on your phone or your iPad or whatever, and you have the notification to pop up to the screen turned off, like the banner?
Exactly. Yeah, I know people that every time they're mentioned on Twitter, their phone actually buzzes like it's a text message. And every time that someone likes one of their posts or does something on Facebook, shares their post, I don't know what it is, but they do something, then they get a buzz on their phone. And frankly, if you're trying to get work done, that is awful.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I actually got to the point where I turned off a lot of them. I still have one, that prescription app from, I think it's Walgreens. It's like RX Remind or something like that. And what it does is it just reminds me every 2 hours to drink a glass of water. And then primary use of it is to actually remind me to drink 8 glasses of water a day.
Yeah, well, and that makes sense. And every 2 hours isn't actually that bad. I mean, so I have things like, obviously, calendar reminders, if I have a call or if I have something where I need to be somewhere, yes, those are going to buzz, right? Because I need a reminder 10 minutes before. And then I do, you know, if you're doing a Pomodoro technique where you're working in 25-minute stretches, obviously you need a timer, some kind of alert to alert you to the end of that. So I wouldn't say turn off all notifications of any kind, but it's the things that are interrupting, right? The things that take your focus away. And what I find is that people slip in and out of this. I think I do as well, where I will leave. Sometimes I find myself just leaving my Gmail tab open because it's like my lizard brain wants me to get distracted and it doesn't want to sit down and do the hard work. And that I have to actively think, close this down, shut off the notifications, really get to work and force yourself to do it, because your mind doesn't want you to do it, right? Because that's the hard work and you're kind of trying to trick it into focusing.
I've found myself doing that sometimes where it's just I'll be flipping over to my email every once in a while, every couple of minutes. It's like, wait, if I'm working, I'll just actually close down the tab like you were just saying and put a pause on the email box so that even if I go to my phone, the stuff just doesn't show up.
Third tactic I want to talk about is to stop watching, listening to, reading, or otherwise consuming mainstream news. If something important happens, you are going to hear about it. Someone's going to talk about it. Someone's going to mention it. You're going to hear about it. Instead of news, I choose to focus on listening to audiobooks or podcasts that actually educate you, or listening purely to fiction, right? Stuff that's actually going to relax you and kind of get your creative juices flowing. So instead of news on your phone, like instead of sitting there and thumbing through news stories from the day, which is just, it's similar to like Facebook and Twitter, where I'll find myself, I've actually deleted Facebook from my phone. And the reason is because I would find myself going to Facebook and the top two posts are interesting, right? And relating to me. And it's my wife saying something or my mom or something. And so I read through it. And then before long, I've been on there for 10 minutes and I'm looking at people from high school and I really don't care what they're up to. You know, I don't care what their kid's doing or whatever. And yet you get sucked into this thing. And that's how I feel like the news on my phone turned into, right? The New York Times alerts, and it would have news that was interesting at the top, but then I'd spend 15 minutes reading it. And it's just the way for your mind to kind of try to occupy itself instead of actually being calm and actually either centering and, you know, centering yourself for the day or thinking about things that are important. Instead of reading news on your phone, think about being productive, like answering emails or write a blog post or write notes for a blog post or schedule a tweet for that matter, right? Engage with your audience a little bit. There is very, very little value that you will get from mainstream news, whereas you can actually get some value out of certain audiobooks, podcasts, and potentially listening to fiction.
No, I totally agree with you. I know different people have their favorite news websites and stuff like that, and I do as well, but the one I've kind of gravitated towards is CNN.com and MSN.com, and I found that just by not going there ever, it wasn't as if I ever missed anything. And you're right. I mean, other people will mention it to you if it's important. And the reality is most of the stuff that you see on the mainstream news is just clearly not important to you. It doesn't matter. It's not going to materially affect your life. And I'd say that's the real problem with it. I mean, it's just they're sucking away your time and not really giving anything back to you.
That's the issue I have with it. I'm not saying that news is not valuable. I'm not saying that being informed about the world and politics and what's going on is not valuable. But doing it every time you're standing in line or, you know, every 30 minutes compulsively checking the news, and I've had friends who are news junkies, it winds up being a tremendous amount of time, and it's a bit of a crutch or an addiction of sorts, just like Facebook and Twitter and social networks and all that stuff can be, or email can be for us, where we actually want to seek that interruption and it kind of like relaxes us. It's getting away from that stuff that you're doing impulsively, and you know, I think news is a big one. So the fourth tactic I want to talk about, I mentioned already, is to put your phone in the other room when you're with your family. And the reason I say that is because when you're working, you should be working. You should be working really hard. And when you're not working, when you're with your family, you should be with your family. And you should be doing that really well. And so you either need to figure out a way to not take your phone out of your pocket, which I do almost instinctively every 10 or 15 minutes. And so putting it in the other room or just getting it out of arm's reach is a good way to really step away from something for a few hours.
You know, when I carried my phone around in my pocket a lot, I just had this natural tendency to pull out my phone and check my email and Twitter and all this other stuff just because I had my phone with me. Even if the phone's just not in your pocket, if it's somewhere else, like if it's on the microwave or on a shelf or something like that, it doesn't even actually need to be in the other room. As long as it's inconvenient for you to go get it, that's generally enough of a hurdle for you to not do it.
Tactic number five is don't say email me or call me unless you really mean it. And what I mean by that is at the end of my talks, I used to say, here's my email address, email me if you have questions. Or when I'd meet with founders, we'd have a discussion over lunch and I was, you know, doing something to help them out. And at the end, I'd say, well, email me if you ever have questions. if you do that long enough, suddenly you are going to get too many emails and you're not going to be able to answer them all and you're going to feel guilty. And so I've now taken a little more of a, I don't know, a strategic approach to this. And when I'm at the end of a meeting with founders or with people asking me advice, I typically say, well, I wish you the best of luck with it. And you know, if they do email me, then that's cool. And if they ask, well, can I email you with questions? I'll always say yes, because I still, you know, answer a lot of these emails. But I've stopped kind of putting it out there, because at a certain point, it just becomes a little too much to keep up with. The sixth tactic is to say no a lot. This requires quite a bit of discipline, actually. I get multiple requests per day for my time for different reasons. People want to jump on calls. People have questions. People have, there's just a ton of different things that could revolve around, whether it's MicroConf or any number of projects or apps that I'm working on. And the way that I found to guard my time is to say no. And I have to say no to stuff that I want to do, even stuff that will help people out. There's some local stuff where that people have asked me to speak and I really have wanted to, and it would be fun and it would give back to them. And at certain times, sometimes I do it, but other times you just have to say no. And you really have to weigh, you can't just weigh the time. If someone says, hey, can you come do a 20-minute talk somewhere? Or can you do, you know, help us out by just writing a little bit of code or doing, you know, 2 hours of tech support for this local nonprofit? And if you have the time, that's awesome. But you also have to think about the greater kind of ramifications of that. Because a 20-minute talk means you then have to prep it. You have to practice it. You have to show up. You have to be there for, you know, whatever, the full hour. You have to talk to people afterwards. You may get invited to do other things. So it always turns into more time than you think it's going to. And again, I've always made it a point. I give donate quite a bit of my time and money to charities and nonprofits, and I value those things. At a certain point, you do have to learn to say no to people that sometimes you really want to interact with.
Yeah, I think that most of the time your default answer should be no, unless there's a very compelling reason to say yes to that kind of stuff. And I think one of the underlying reasons for that is because if you start saying yes to a lot of things, then what tends to happen is that you get asked to do more things. And it's not to say that those aren't helpful for other people, but at the same time, at some point, you're probably going to find yourself overcommitted. And when you're overcommitted, that's when you start to feel guilty, because then things start to fall on the floor. And you feel more guilty about letting other people's stuff fall on the floor than your own. So what will happen is you'll end up helping other people instead of doing the things that you really need to do, and you'll start pushing those off.
And I also think this depends on where you're at in your career. I think early on in your career, you should say yes to more, because you tend to have more time available, and you are seeking opportunities, right? You're just looking for ways to interact and to be around more people and to build a network and all that stuff. But as time goes on, I see people overcommitting themselves. Actually, most people overcommit themselves in general, both in their personal lives and in their professional lives. And I think that learning to say no, I liked what you said about making it the default response and then only reconsidering if there's a compelling reason to do that. And that compelling reason doesn't just need to be a selfish reason, right? It could be a compelling reason like, wow, this is a really good cause, or these developers are really going to get a lot of value out of it. I drove up to Mountain View, which is, you know, 3 hours from Fresno, and I gave a talk at the Googleplex to a group of, it was a Google developer group or something. And so it was, a long drive and stuff, but I realized, A, I really wanted to do a talk at the Googleplex, and that was kind of fun. B, there were a lot of folks there. Like, if there had been 25 people there, I wouldn't have gone, but there wound up being, 100, 150 people. And the third reason, my parents live up there and my brother. And so I was able to tie all that in and convince myself, you know what, this is a good cause. I'm going to donate my time. It's going to be fun. People are going to get value out of it. And I'm going to be able to work a family trip into it too. So there are compelling reasons to do it, but especially as time goes on and your time becomes more and more valuable, I think that's leading with no and then figuring out, whether you should say yes is the right approach. Seventh tactic is to schedule time for Twitter like a mad person. Either don't do Twitter at all, or if you do it, schedule it and do one, maybe two times a day. Schedule your tweets in bulk. There's a bunch of systems and ways for doing this. Not going to go into them here, but I find that Twitter can be, just like Facebook, a real kind of time suck and a real default thing. And if you're not able to block yourself from doing it, then there are tools you can download that'll keep you from doing it. But I found that just getting on there once in the morning, once in the afternoon, looking through, responding to everyone, and then scheduling some tweets personally has been a really good approach for me. And it keeps me from thinking about it all the time. It keeps me from interrupting myself with it, but it also keeps me engaged. It's not like I log in every 3 days or 4 days and then people feel like you're ignoring them.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worse at this than you are, I think. I'll log on to Twitter, you know, kind of when I get bored. And anytime my email hits where it says, oh, so-and-so has sent you a message, that's when I tend to go out and look at Twitter. I like your approach of just, you know, hitting it once in the morning and then once in the afternoon, because that way you've got scheduled times for it and you can dedicate that time for it. But I know a lot of people will use it for, you know, essentially conversations back and forth. To me, I find that extremely interrupting. I'd rather just use an email or just use a phone call or something like that.
Yep. Yeah, I rarely do the conversation thing. Every once in a while it'll happen. But and when I schedule time for it, it tends to be about, I try to keep it to less than 10 minutes. And that's both for the reading and responding and scheduling stuff. And I'm managing multiple Twitter accounts, so I'm moving pretty quick when I do that. Tactic number 8 is to remove the mental burden of remembering things and let the cloud handle it. So this is similar, if you've heard of GTD, getting things done. Basically, it's to use a written to-do list of some kind. And whether that's on paper, I recommend using something in the cloud, like Trello is what we use. Shopping lists I used to have on paper. We did away with that. And now we have a doc in Simple Note, and it's shared between the two of us. And anytime any of us brings up something at the store, one of us adds it. You know, there's a system in place basically to capture that information. And if I'm, let's say I'm at dinner, I'm in a conversation and someone mentions something that needs to be an action item for me. They're like, oh, hey, did I mention I, you know, saw a typo on your website the other day? Or there's this fantastic new movie or this iOS app that you need to download. I never try to remember it. I always say, oh, I'm totally going to email that to myself right now. Pop up an email and I just have Trello as the contact name, and that's my Trello board. And it goes to the top of the board. And then the next time I go in there, I move it to the appropriate board, and I actually have an iOS app queue, and I have a movie queue, and I have all the stuff that I do. And if I was, you know, one step beyond that is to actually have different email addresses for each of those boards so that I don't have to touch it twice, because realistically, I shouldn't have to touch that issue twice.
You know, similar to you, I think you said you use Simple Note. We use a program called AnyList, and my wife and I just are both signed up for it. And that way, if we're at the store or something like that, and the other person thinks of something, they can add it, and it pops up right on the list so that we know that we need to go get whatever it is. So if there's, you know, we're missing milk or eggs or whatever, if for whatever reason it didn't end up on the list, like, you can check it, and it will show you what is crossed off. So, like, you can almost kind of see, like, where in the store somebody is based on what things they've checked off. We have a process in place where once you're done shopping, before you go and start adding other things to it, you delete the list so that way you see all the deleted entries get removed as well. It's just a process. And as long as you have that process in place to manage that information, you don't have to think about it anymore. And that's the key thing, is not having to think about it or try to remember stuff that you really have no business trying to remember.
So the 9th and final tactic that we'll talk about is to eliminate meetings. And there's this concept of the maker's schedule versus the manager's schedule, something that Paul Graham talked about in an essay. And the idea is that makers need long stretches of quiet productivity, and managers tend to chop their day up with a bunch of meetings. And I think salespeople are like that too, right? They need to have a lot of meetings, and they have to work around client schedules. So they will have very interrupted schedules. In my opinion, trying to be both a maker and a manager at the same time is incredibly unproductive. And if you can avoid it at all cost, I would do so. And this is one of the reasons that I have slowly weaned myself away from development. Because as much as I love developing and I love creating and building, you need a maker schedule to do that. And I have too much going on with all the projects that I'm working on and everything I'm doing. And so I've had to hire people who can have maker schedules. And now I respect their maker schedules. There are no meetings at our company. The only thing, we have a weekly lunch that we all go to and talk. But other than that, we interact and we take care of things as they come up. But I never want to time box these guys' time, because I know what it's like to be a developer and be working on something and realize, wow, in 15 minutes I have a meeting and I have to stop what I'm doing. It's incredibly bad for productivity.
Yeah, I've been trying to kind of wean myself away from that as well, so that I'm not doing any more of the development tasks. I would say I have more of a manager schedule, but how do you resolve the discrepancy where you've got to do a maker's schedule in order to do things like, you know, AdWords and things like that? Mm-hmm. Because obviously there's content creation, there's website tweaks, and maybe you're not making anything, but you're doing things that do require some concentration in order to
do it. Absolutely, like writing copy, the long form homepage on Drip took me,
yes,
you know, an hour to do the first round, and then like 4 hours of revising, and then I've written a couple blog posts recently that have been several hours in the making. And when I did those, I basically went off the grid. Like, I turned off all notifications, I blocked out about 2 hours to get the initial round done. And I did my thing where I drank some caffeine. I turned on loud music in the headphones and I just went into the zone and I totally cranked it out really, you know, as fast as I possibly could. And I totally blocked things off. And if I have any type of call or anything scheduled, I can't do that because I know that if I'm time boxed on the outside that I'm going to get interrupted, there's something in the back of my mind that won't let me get into flow because I'm thinking about it. And so when I say I blocked out 2 hours, what I actually mean is I put 2 hours on the calendar. I mentally said, all right, I'm going to try to sprint for 2 hours. But I had nothing scheduled for 3 or 4. So I knew that if I ran over and I kept being in the flow, that I would just continue to crank on that. And in fact, one day I got so kind of motivated that I wrote the complete blog post and I still had another thought and I started another one. I got a complete draft done. And then I went in and revised my sales letter all in one day. And typically I just don't have enough good glucose that is available to create that much content. But some days you'll find that if you do in fact get in the zone, that it can carry over like that.
So to clarify, this isn't necessarily about maintaining a maker schedule or a manager schedule. It's being able to kind of interleave them between each other such that maybe on one day you do one and on a different day you do the other. It sounds like more like it's not strictly about eliminating one and just doing the other instead.
Yeah, perhaps. If I could help it, I would not have meetings ever. I would not do Skype calls. I would not do the podcast interviews and stuff, but I enjoy them and they help me in my business. And so I do, in fact, find it a necessary thing that I have to balance. I don't know that everyone has to, though. You know, I think that if at all possible, like if I didn't have these podcast interviews and kind of the other stuff that I do via Skype, that I would try to be much more of a maker schedule. But I think if you are forced into it, then yes, it's the ability to switch between them quickly, because to try to block out that time and to get into the zone quickly is hard. It's a learned skill and you need to figure out what your triggers are for that. And we've talked about that a little bit in the past, but like I will often loop a song over and over and over and listen to it straight for 2 hours. And then for weeks, anytime I play that song, it will trigger me into the zone. And that's the way that I'm able to sometimes get in the zone in 3 or 4 minutes, which is kind of unheard of, right? I mean, typically it takes you 15 or 20 minutes to really get into the flow. But if you figure out your triggers and you can switch back and forth between maker and manager schedules faster.
Yeah, I like the idea of just scheduling 2, 3, or 4 hours or whatever on your calendar so that you're not interrupted for other things. But obviously that's also going to take, you know, you have to start turning off your phone and doing various things and schedule that in such a way that you know you're not going to be interrupted. Because the second you're interrupted when you're trying to establish that maker's schedule, I mean, everything's just goes right out the window. I mean, you just take such a hit in your productivity that it almost wasn't worth even scheduling that time to begin with.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you really have to do most of the previous 8 tactics we've talked about in order for this last one to work. And that's why I put it last. So to review our 9 tactics we talked about are to answer email in the morning. Number 2, to turn off email, Facebook, and Twitter notifications. Number 3, to stop watching, listening to, reading, or otherwise consuming mainstream news. Number 4, to put your phone in the other room when you're with your family. Number 5, don't say email me or call me unless you mean it. Number 6, to say no a lot. Number 7, schedule time for Twitter. Number 8, remove the mental burden of remembering things. And number 9, eliminate meetings and figure out if you're going to have a maker schedule or a manager schedule.
If you have a question for us or a suggestion for a podcast episode, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690. Or you can email it to us at questions@startupsforrestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsforrestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.